Welcome to the Camera Podcast, Pubs, Pints and People.
Welcome to Camera's first ever podcast celebrating the wonderful world of our beer, cider and pubs. As well as your hosts deep in the cellars at Camera HQ, we'll be hearing from a team of correspondents right across the country.
Today, we're going to be discussing all things beer festivals. We'll be sitting down with Catherine Tonry, the National Volunteer Director responsible for organising Camera's largest beer festival, the Great British Beer Festival, otherwise known as the GBBF. So I'll also be speaking with Lottie Peplow later on in the show, who's represented the Brewers Association of America. Now, the Brewers Association also runs their own American counterpart of the GBBF, known as the Great American Beer Festival, and we're going to find out about how this festival started, how it compares to the GBBF, and the relationship it still has with GBBF today.
If you've got any questions about the topics discussed or your own stories to share, please send them to podcast@camera.org.uk.
Camera has 192,000 members running 200 beer festivals and other events around the country, so we hope to get as many of you lovely lot involved as we can.
Absolutely. I suppose we better introduce ourselves. So hello everybody, well my name is Ant Fiorillo and I'm from the Bedford branch. Well actually I'm from the North Beds branch.
I'm Matt Bundy, I'm from the Mid Chilterns branch.
And I'm Katie Wiles, I work at the Camera office.
Whoop whoop. So on behalf of all three of us, may we say
hello. Hello. Now before we go into interviews with our guests, I have to ask you both, what brought you here? How did you get into Camera?
I was just hanging around outside and you let me in. You mentioned something about free beer. I think for me, my great joy when I go into a pub, as I want to, is to see an amazing array of different beers and ciders and offer local treats, loads of different specialities. And I'm just really passionate about protecting that variety, making sure that when I get there, it's not just all the same and I get new things to discover. So there's a selfish reason why I like Camera. It's my own enjoyment.
Brilliant. What about nice. You, Ant?
I was down at a train facility in Bedfordshire and we were all on a day off and some of the chaps were going out for the day into Bedford. And they said, do you want to come along? I said, what are you doing? They said, we're going to go on a bar crawl. We've just downloaded this fantastic app called Cask Finder. And we're going to go and get some of these scans. And I said, yeah, I'll come along with you then. Scrolled around Bedford for the day. Had a wonderful time. Tasted some really great beer. And I thought, well, that's my lager drinking career over.
Amazing.
And the membership card landed on my doorstep very shortly afterwards. Well, and what about you, Katie? It's all right. Why did you get involved with Camera as a career?
Well, I mean, I saw a job that I liked, but I thought, how could I work in beer? And somehow ended up in it, and I absolutely love it. I've been here for 5 years.
Did you get paid in beer?
Yes. No.
A firkin.
It was a really... Right. Really, yeah.
Paid in firkin.
That'd be amazing.
I do have to say, it does sometimes tend to be a perk of the job. We've got some nice beers here today that we're going to be sampling throughout the podcast. It's just absolutely seemed to line up with a passion of mine. Part of this program, we're going to be asking people who come on the show to talk us through what their desert island beer is. So the idea is to find out what beer you would have if you were stranded on a deserted island. So I think it'd be appropriate to ask you guys to start off with.
It really depends on the time of the year for me, but if I really had to pick one... I recently had one by Witchwood Brewery and it's called Dryneck and it's made with mosaic hops and it is delicious.
Lovely.
So much so that I ordered a second before finishing the first, so I knew it was a good beer. So probably
you said line it up.
Yeah, that's it. I said, you know, you can pour another one of them after I've taken the second sip of the first one. It's delicious.
Well, so it's a seasonal stranding. You only want to be stranded in the autumnal months on a desert
that's
island.
That's it. I don't want to be out in the chill.
That's true.
What about you, Matt?
Well, I'm gonna be greedy. I'm gonna have one from the north and one from the south. So I'm originally from Cumbria, so there's loads of great local ales, as you know, that to choose from. So I was thinking Keswick Brewery, I'm going to go Ulverston Brewery because that's my hometown. And they do lots of beers that are based on Stan and Laurel and Hardy films because Stan Laurel was born there. So I'm going to go for Laughing Gravy, which is a delicious local ale there. But my adopted home of Berkhamsted, my local pub where I joined Camera, where I read the leaflet I talked to you about.
The leaflets work.
The leaflet works. So they got me. So I'm going to name the Tring Brewery. They have an Side Pocket.
Oh, really, yes.
Which we've talked about before.
Yeah, side pocket for a toad. Yummy, yummy, yummy. What about you, Katie? Desert Island beer, stranded forever, for eternity, what are you drinking?
I might get sick of it, but I really love a really dark, meaty, heavy stout, especially in the winter. So Siren has one called Broken Dreams, and it's like this amazing breakfast stout, really full, very rich, very chocolatey and coffee, and just it's just like having a chocolate dessert after a lovely meal.
Let me just get something right. Did I hear breakfast stout?
Yeah, you can have it for breakfast.
Perfect. So we'll pop round to your island for breakfast. Mine's a kind of a long afternoon session.
So between the three of us, we've covered the day off.
We've done really well.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's hope our desert islands are close together.
Yeah, let's hope. I'm really intrigued to see what our guests choose for theirs. So make sure you're listening every week for those ones.
Yeah,
Desert
definitely.
Island beer. Love that. Love it.
Brilliant. And then today we're going to be talking all things beer festivals.
So what a way to start.
And Kemmerer actually organised the very first festival in this country back in 1975, where we are currently based.
Right here on this spot.
But it was the St. Albans Beer Exhibition, which is kind of amazing to think that at one point beer festivals was a novel concept, because it seems like you can find one every day on every street corner, every town and city.
What did people do with their weekends before this? Where did they try new beers?
So have you gone to GBBF for yourselves, or?
I have.
Local festivals?
I had a great time there. I think I didn't quite make it through all of the beers, but gave it a real good go.
Well, there are 1,000.
There are thousands. Yeah, I can't beat myself up too much though over there. Yeah, just a little bit of food, good time with friends. It's that process of discovery. It's finding new ones that you've never heard of before. And there were some weird and wonderful ones, I remember as well, that you kind of, some of them, I'll be honest, you kind of take a sip and you think, that's maybe just, I'm only going to be having that half. But then there are other ones where you think, I've got to take down every detail. I've got to hug the person who's given it to me, because it's usually the makers, some of them were there themselves. I just want to hug you and thank you for giving me this wonderful moment, and I'll take a crate home.
I mean, I'm the same. I've certainly done beer festivals, but there's plenty of them, as Matt said, around the country. I've enjoyed the ones up in Manchester, and I've enjoyed them with my friends, getting the tokens, getting the glasses, getting the souvenirs and the photographs. Great on a summer's day, great in the autumn, even in the winter you get some of them, some of the pubs do them, don't they?
Definitely.
But I tell you, the one thing that they've all got going for them is that it's the people that run them that really make them, and certainly there's so much that goes into a festival. And actually, that's what the next part of our podcast is all about, isn't it? It's our Discover and Learn section, and you are sitting down with one of the organisers from the GBBF, Katie.
I am, Catherine Tunry, who organises the festival for the last few years, and she's going to talk to us all about what goes into a beer festival, how they get off the ground, and what Kemmerer's flagship festival really looks like from the inside.
So, lovely listeners, sit back, take a sip of whatever you've got in your hand, and let's see how Katie got on when she met Catherine Tunry.
Learn and discover.
Hello everyone, I am sitting down today with Catherine Tunry, who is the national organiser for the Great British Beer Festival. So for anyone who doesn't know, GBBF takes place every August at the Olympia in London. It is completely run and managed by volunteers who actually use up their holiday time from work to trek all the way down to London to pull pints, help with the setup, steward events and fill many other jobs. Catherine, why do you do it?
Well, for several reasons. I initially got involved as I was a Kemmerer member who lived in the local area. And so I went along to see what it was all about as a volunteer. I'd been as a punter for several years, so I enjoyed the festival and I knew that. And the reason I stayed around really was the people. I've met some fantastic, fantastic people that volunteer every year that I really, really enjoy working with. And it's just great. It's a second family for me.
So you started off several years ago. What was your first role at GBBF?
I initially came on along and just pulled pints behind a bar. I didn't know anybody at the festival at the time. I came along not knowing anybody. I fortunately found a good bar team. Through them got to know the rest of the festival and sort of worked my way up. So before I became festival organiser, I was a bar manager. I moved on to organising
everything. So can you tell us a bit
more about what the festival is all about? If somebody's never been there, what is it?
It's a celebration of great live beer and also cider and perry. So we have the best of live beer from all over the world, primarily British, European beers and American beers, and sometimes even things like we'll have Australian beers sometimes, New Zealand beers, just from all over the world. And also the ciders and perries, all British real cider and perry. So it's all live products, very good, very natural.
Why do people usually go there then?
To try a wide range of beers. For the experience of it, we found that it's not just the beers, it's a great day out. We've got great beer, we've got great food, we've got street vendors, that sort of thing. We have traditional pub games, we have a stage where we have great bands on and some music. Last year, a weird one we had slightly was silent disco on one of the days, which seemed to go down very well with quite a lot of customers.
Amazing. So how far in advance do you have to start planning something like this?
Immediately, basically. Once 1 year's finished, I start thinking about the next year.
No rest,
and I have to fit in the day job in between.
Exactly. So you say you kind of start organising everything immediately. What's kind of involved as national organiser?
Well, for GBBF, I'm mostly coordinating my team, which is known as the working party. Mm-hmm. They're my sort of senior managers. I coordinate what they're doing. I chair the meetings. I liaise with the venue, making sure that everything's right there. I liaise with the camera office staff for the bits they do in terms of publicity and things like that. And generally just make sure other people are doing their jobs at that stage.
Brilliant. And so what are some of the best and worst parts of the job?
The best parts are just it's the satisfaction, I think, is there. When you're there on opening day, all the stress has been worth it. Just to get there and just say, yes, we're open. It's a huge event. And be able to do that in your spare time. I'm not sure there's any other volunteer-led event in the country that is that big.
What type of volunteering jobs, if someone wanted to get involved, what can you do there?
Well, we've got all sorts of jobs. The majority of our volunteers just want to work behind a bar and pull pints and things. But we do have our stewards, and our stewards I don't envy in the slightest, as most of them don't drink during the event. They sometimes make up for a bit afterwards. But that's besides the point. Then we've got our games. So we have a wide variety of pub games. So we have people working on those. We have our membership stand, people working there. We have a couple of shops, one that sells Brewerana and one that sells camera merchandise and a game. We've got volunteers in our staffing office, volunteers running our stalls. Every job you can think of at the event, it's almost all done by volunteers, except for the food stands where we sell space for those and we get professional caterers in to do those.
So what's maybe like the most surprising bit of the job that you've come up against?
I'm not sure about surprising. It's everything's a bit different sometimes. It's very different from my day job. I'm a research academic in the day job, and so organising an event this size is just something completely different. It's not something you usually encounter in my line of work.
Do you think that's why a lot of people get involved, to kind of get some experience in something that isn't what they want to do?
Often, yes. It does help a lot. It's something we encourage people to do, is to actually go on training courses so they've actually got something they can show to their employer and says, look, I can do this as well.
Yeah.
And that helps with promotion and things like that in these days, because it's often difficult to get training in other ways. The other thing is, and quite a lot of people do it because it's something different. It is a rest. It's this sort of a change. It's hard work, but it's a change is as good as a rest. It is a bit like taking a holiday. Although then again, we have people basically taking a busman's holiday, and they come along and they drive a forklift at work. They come and drive a forklift for us. It's crazy.
I always just find it so amazing going there and just seeing these people who have taken off, because it's the week before as well and after for setup and takedown. Taking such that holiday from work to come and work.
I take 14 days off, basically.
Wow.
Well, 3 weeks if I include the rest either side, just to make sure.
Oh, my God. It's dedication.
Yeah.
So what's the kind of day in the life of a volunteer like?
At GBBF, it depends on where you're working. Most of our volunteers, as I say, work on the bars. They usually get in about 11 o'clock for opening at 12. Mm-hmm. They'd go down, see their bar manager. if they're new on the Bath that day, they'd be given a health and safety briefing. Sometimes they'd have a chance to then taste some of the beers to make sure they know what they're serving, because often customers will come up to the bar and say, oh, well, what's this? What do you recommend? And you can't recommend anything unless you've just tried some.
It's not their fault. They have to try the beer.
It's such a shame. And so often that's that case. And then you work some shifts behind the bar. You'd have a lunch break, other breaks. So you'd be able to go behind and every sort of so often just have a sip of beer and a few minutes to yourself, and then back out on the bar. So we don't work people too hard.
Am I right in thinking that there's a volunteer party at some point as
well? Yes, indeed, we have a staff bar that is exclusive for the staff, partially donated beer and partially beer we pay for upstairs, where you'd go up and the beer's all free.
Always nice.
This is great fun.
I mean, what do you think is the biggest challenge facing GBBF, and how are we standing out from the crowd?
Well, I think, our competition is so, so strong these days in this area. And I think the way we stand out from the crowd is partially that we all live beer. We don't serve any pasteurised beer. It's all live. Well, at least all our draft beer is. Some of the American bottles and cans are pasteurized, but all our other beer, all our draft beer, is a live product.
So can you explain what live
beer
means?
In here, live is another term for real ale, which is what Camera is all about. It is beer that contains viable live yeast and has a secondary fermentation, which means it's the freshest it can possibly be.
So that's my understanding of keg, isn't it? That they take out that live yeast and artificially inject it with CO2 to get that
some keg they fermentation. Do. And that's the thing. It's one of the reasons we were able to have things like key keg this year. And a key keg is technically it's a different product to a traditional keg, but you still have a live beer product in there, and it's still real ale by Camera's definition.
Because this year we had a whole kind of key keg section, didn't we?
And that was all still live beer, and it's all still real ale by Camera's definition at that stage.
Amazing. Okay, so even though it looks like, if you were a consumer coming to the bar, it looks like keg because it's got that keg font, but it's still the top quality material. Brilliant. That's great. I mean, there's a lot of, I guess, changes this year. Bringing in that kind of craft beer section. We made the headlines for banning sexist beer at the festival. And there's a lot of, I guess, positive feedback from people saying that it was a really kind of modern, forward-looking festival. What are the plans for next year?
Well, at the moment, we're still in early days of planning as we're recording this, but there should be a few changes this year, more bedding in what we changed last year, because we had a whole host of really big changes last year. Tickets should be available now, and we'll be still at Olympia.
Thank you very much for joining us on the program, Catherine.
Well, that sounded fun.
I think I'll be going again.
Who knows? We might even do a live podcast from there. It depends how successful it is. Let's see if we can get a fan base going. Get us viral on the Twitter, folks, and we'll be there, microphones in hand and pint glasses in the others. Now, don't forget, if it's not in your diaries, as mentioned, the next Great British Beer Festival for 2020 is taking place on the 5th to the 8th of August at the Olympia in London. There's over 1,000 different beers under one roof. Can you hear the angels calling yet? It's the largest stand-up pub in Britain.
And tickets have just gone on sale. You can get them at gbbf.org.uk. And as a special treat to our listeners, the first 10 people to spread the word about this new podcast on Twitter can get a pair of free tickets. So just use the hashtag #CameraPodcast and get tweeting.
Bear with me a sec. I'm just not on Twitter right now.
Yeah, I've got 10 fake accounts. So that's absolutely fine.
What's the data farms you see in other countries where there's 1,000 iPhones?
No, that's just me. It's just me back in Cumbria. Okay, so we've had our chance to choose our desert island beers. Let's speak to an expert from the industry and give them their chance, eh?
Desert Island Beer.
Hello, nice to be here. Thanks very much for having me along.
It's great to have you here. Thank you for being so lively and enthused. And I must say as well, for those that can't see, I've got something very delicious that looks very delicious in front of me. I'm going to talk about that in just a second. But before we do, let's talk about what it is you do for a living.
I'm the American Craft Beer Ambassador for Europe. Basically, what that means is I'm trying to facilitate new opportunities in the international markets for American craft beer. And I'm also looking to promote American beer to the media. and to educate international trader media on.
Amazing. And you get to do that for a living.
I do. Brilliant. It's a hard life. It really is. Someone's got to do it.
I'm going to avert our attention to the fact that you've bestowed upon us here at Canberra this bottle in front of us. And can you explain exactly what you bought to the studio today for our listeners?
Well, I thought you might like to try this medal-winning porter from a company called Port City Brewing in Alexandria in Virginia. It's 7.2% absolutely classic porter. It's really so roasty and chocolatey and full of lovely coffee aromas. You'll try it. You'll see when you try it. But it's just recently won gold at the Stockholm Beer and Whiskey Festival in September. And it also won a silver medal at the World Beer Cup, organised by the Brewers Association in America in 2018. So it's a very, very acclaimed beer. It's also from an independent brewer. You can see on the label, just spin the label around, there's a little symbol that shows that it's from a truly authentic independent craft brewery, not one of the big guys. And so we can crack that open later and you can tell me what you think.
Well, I think there's no time like the present,
absolutely,
obviously, is there?
Good idea.
Would you like to do the honours?
I certainly would.
There we are. Just put those keys out of the way. I'm going to just give it a smell, if that's all right.
Shall we pour it into a glass?
Let's pour. Here we are.
Get the full aroma. So you've got to swirl it round first as well, don't forget. Oh, listen to that sound. Isn't that wonderful?
Isn't that great?
So now what we're going to do is swirl it around the glass, cover the glass, keep all that lovely aroma under your hand, stick your nose in, full of rich coffee and chocolate. And I get quite a lot of soy sauce, kind of umami flavour on it,
definitely,
as well. And a lot of roast. Right, now try it. Isn't that lovely?
My mouth has just come alive.
How good this would be with a beef casserole or a beef stew or meatballs or something, ribs or burgers, or some sort of chocolate cake or coffee cake or gâteau. It goes so well with food.
Anything like that.
Yeah, it's a real compliment to food. So I'm always, when I'm, you know, at home eating and drinking, as I often am, this comes out pretty regularly to have with my evening meal, and it's always wonderful. It's the sort of beer that you, if you're a red wine drinker, try something like a classic porter like this. And it's,
oh, great,
and it's
top tip for the listeners. Yeah. So readily available in the UK?
Yeah, this one is, yes. Porter from Port City Brewing Company. And yeah, I think you can get that from Beers of Europe.
Great.
Online.
If you have not tried it, try it. Trust me, my mouth has got this beautiful aftertaste of definitely chocolate. And that's definitely what I'm getting. So we're going to leave them on the side and we're going to sip those. I've got a few questions for you. So tell us more about the Brewers Association.
It's a trade body, so it's a not-for-profit trade body, and it's organised by brewers, for brewers, and for the brewing community. And the Brewers Association does things like advocate for duty changes at congressional level, research new hot funding breeding programmes, for example. It produces masses of amazing stats and resources for the industry, educational resources, you name it.
So, we've got the Great British Beer Festival, which a lot of our listeners will be familiar with, that grand old event that happens each year with lots of choice, lots of beers, a real sense of community where everybody comes together to have great beer and have a great time with each other. Talk to me about the Great American Beer Festival.
Well, many moons ago, say about 40-odd years ago, the founder of the Brewers Association, who is a real legend called Charlie Papazian, very well known in home brewing circles and craft, basically helped start the American craft brewing movement. He came over to the UK and he met up with the late, great Michael Jackson. And the two of them visited the Great British Beer Festival, wherever it would have been in like the early 1980s. And they were so inspired and so enthralled and so impressed with the event that they shared a vision for this sort of thing happening in America. So then they went back to America, to Boulder in Colorado, where they're based. And they went about setting up their own festival. So in 1982, this vision happened and the first Great American Beer Festival kicked off. And it was in Boulder, Colorado. And there were only 24 breweries, 47 beers and 800 people.
Wow. At the first one.
At the very first one in 1982.
And today?
So fast forward that up to now. We've just had the 38th, I think. And there were 60,000 people.
Wow.
We have about 800 breweries at the festival. and there are about 4,000 separate beers. So it's been a huge roller coaster, yeah. an enormous increase. But all in line with the growth of American craft beer and how it's got bigger, and it's showing no signs of slowing down. There is still a massive thirst for American craft beer in the States and around the world.
It'd take you a lifetime just to try and get round tasting a quarter of that, right? Or
well, that's the problem at the Great American Beer Fest. There's so many beers. It's so big.
Yes.
You just almost don't know where to start. It's almost overwhelming.
Yes.
And the venue it's held in is the Denver Convention Center in Denver. And the festival itself is about the size of 8 football pitches.
Wow.
So if you can imagine rows and rows of aisles of beer all the way up and down. And I think the beer lines themselves account for about 5 miles. I mean, it's just insane. It really is. It's mind-blowing. And you stand and you think, I don't know what to do. But there's a lot of things that make life easier. Like there's an app, a really good app for finding the beer, finding what brewery you want to go to. And it's arranged very sensibly and regionally. Yes. But there's no way you can do all the beers. It's
insane. And how long does it run for typically?
3 days. Well, there are 4 sessions, Thursday night, Friday night, and then 2 sessions on Saturday. But 60,000 people go across those 3
sessions.
Yeah, it's massive.
Absolutely. You can't even imagine that volume of traffic.
I know.
Can you?
It's incredible.
Well, you can imagine it. You've seen that for your own eyes.
But the noise is insane as well. Yeah, you're walking around the festival and there's so many people and everyone's having such a great time. It really is. I mean, such a voyage of discovery. But it's a... the buzz is insane. It's absolutely incredible. And of course, the difference with the Great British Beer Festival is there's only in America, you just get that 1 ounce pour. So you get a little glass that you sample. You're not just going in there to, you know, drink loads, but you have small amounts of each beer and you go around sampling as many as you can. But for some of the real sexy stuff, there's often 10 minutes
queue. Wow, when you're waiting in minutes, you know the queue's long.
Yeah.
A lot of the camera festival was a volunteer run, mm-hmm. and quite reliant on that. Is that the same for the Great American Beer Festival?
Absolutely. The volunteers are so good. They're amazing. I mean, it wouldn't happen without them. So for the last festival in 2019, there were 4,280 volunteers.
Wow.
I know, it's incredible, isn't it? But they really are. They're a godsend. They're fantastic. Yeah. And they work tirelessly and they love doing it. And they come back year after year. You know, they're very well looked after. And hopefully they have a good time as well. But they're crucial. They're a crucial part of the festival. Same as Great British Beer Festival.
Yeah.
That we rely on volunteers here.
Got people here that are doing it because they actually love the product. And they genuinely have an affection towards the beer.
Yeah.
And who better than to have support in that? Aside from the brewers themselves and the people, that the consumers that go on to enjoy that and can wax lyrical about all of their favourites. So talk to me, Dottie, about the collaboration between the Brewers Association and the GBBF and Camera.
Well, it's great because for the last 15 years, the Brewers Association has flown beers to the Great British Beer Festival, and we have a big bar, part of the Bière Sans Frontières, which this year was called the Papazian Bar, after Charlie Papazian, the founder. And we send anything from 25 to 30 American craft breweries send their beers over, and we pour about over 90 different beers at the bar, and it's just a fantastic opportunity for our brewers to get their beers over to the UK for people to sample them. It's a great opportunity for the British festival goers to try beers they will never ever try anywhere outside America, and some of them are very rare, very specious, they know, very sought after beers, and it's absolutely, people at the beer festival, they do enjoy coming to the Bière Sans Frontières bar and trying all these American beers. And we have such a diverse range, and the quality is so good because they are literally bottled or canned and flown over within days, and they're at the festival and they are fresh as anything, are absolutely sensational. So we're very grateful. The Brewers Association is incredibly grateful to Camera and to the British Beer Festival for allowing us to participate and for welcoming us with open arms. And it's a fantastic relationship, and we're very, very happy. Long may it last. And now we've done 15 years with GBBF, and we hope to do many more, basically.
And I think on that one, I will raise this delicious porter to you, Lottie, and say thank you very much. Right. You know, I haven't formed a proper bucket list yet, but that's got to go on there, right? To just go and see, maybe to drink all of the beers.
Have a podcast 4,000 field trip.
Yeah, 4,000 beers, what could go wrong? Yeah.
Right, so we are now going to move on to the next section of our podcast, and this is going to be something we're going to put into each and every one of our episodes, and it's called Remember When.
So for those of you who don't know, Camera runs a newspaper called What's Brewing, which has been around pretty much since the inception of Camera, and I've managed to dive into the archives and pulled out a What's Brewing from October 1975.
Look at that. That's beautiful. I wish this was smell-o-vision or smell-o-audio.
Smell-o-radio,
because that is a beautiful old paper smell there. That is lovely.
We've got two editions with us, and the first one reports on the Covent Garden Beer Festival, which ran in October 1975 and was a trial run for what would soon become the Great British Beer Festival.
So it says here that more than 40,000 people visited the festival, sinking 150,000 pints. Work out the maths of that. That's a pretty decent ratio.
Yeah.
And that there were 400-yard long queues out the door to try the beers. There were only 50 on tap. Which wasn't bad, I suppose, for the first ever.
Which probably,
but yeah.
Over the course of a few days, you'd probably be able to get all of them done, you know.
I reckon you could.
I feel like I should be wearing white, you know, silky gloves to handle this beautiful piece.
I was anyway, luckily.
Matt just walks around with... he's a magician in his spare time. Yeah. I'm just reading on from what Matt's just read there, you know, these 50 beers. The organisers, coincidentally, had completely underestimated how many people would show up. And by the second day, all 15,000 of the souvenir glasses were stacked up, and they had to bring in plastic glasses.
Amazingly enough, they also had to get emergency beer supplies arranged, and they came in as far afield as Belhaven in Scotland.
I just a really weird thing looking back when you think what Covent Garden is now, but it also says that the event was aimed to bring the area back to life because all the market traders had moved out to a new site, so it was a really kind of like dilapidated area. Can you imagine it now? Like, yeah, all the designer shops go, oh, let's help them out with a beer festival. So it obviously worked.
Camera saved Covent Garden.
Camera saved Covent Garden.
It's official. State the claim. I mean, I can only imagine being one of the organisers back then and thinking, we've run out of beer, we've run out of glasses, what are we going to do? Kind of you goes into panic mode because there's not enough, like, but then surely there must have been that moment of, we've nailed this.
Yeah, exactly. It's working.
It's a test event, it's working.
I'd have loved to have been there. When was the first official Great British Beer Festival then?
So we've got another paper from October 1977, and that is when the first official Great British Beer Festival took place at Alexandra Palace in London, and that was described as a Munich of North London, and boasted 100 beers and 200,000 pints of ale were consumed.
Now, I know you start to get serious now, don't you? Now, the front page of this one has got a fantastic picture on it. There's a picture here of the Monty Python star, Terry Jones, who tasted some of the beer in his own unique way by carefully, I don't know if you do this carefully, but he says, carefully poured 6 pints of ale over his head. He said that you could tell it was real ale by the way it dripped over your shoulders and ran into your boots.
I like there's some quite cutting comments about some of the providers of the beer. So it reads, among the beers not represented at the festival were Young's, who couldn't come because they hadn't even got enough good beer for their own pubs.
What I love it.
Cutting comment.
What it also then goes on to say is, yes, but still in plentiful supply at the close were Heineken and Carlsberg, thoughtfully supplied by the Ali Pali authorities in the long bar.
Thoughtfully.
So we're going to be signing off shortly, but we just wanted to take the opportunity to thank you for joining us for the first ever Camera podcast. We really hope you've had as much fun as we've had here today at the Camera HQ.
And if we managed to inspire you to get involved with a beer festival, why not consider volunteering, eh?
Definitely.
No better payment than free beer. You can get involved, you can go to camera.org.uk/join and you can connect with your local branch and find out about your local beer festival.
And next week you can join us in marking International Women's Day by talking to some of the women who are driving change in the beer industry.
Last orders. So I thought for us to finish off our podcast, and let's call it a tradition, if we're going to be talking about the good stuff and we're surrounded by beer, that we toast.
Absolutely.
Over something delicious. And as you can see, Matt's eyes have lit up, by the way.
He's been staring at me.
I have managed to wrestle a bottle away. I didn't actually have to wrestle it. She you know, was so cool at Lottie in her interview. She said, take one of these back for the guys. I've got the porter for you, Matt. And I poured us a little glass here. So whatever you're sipping at home, this one's Port City. It's a nice 7.2% robust porter available in the UK.
Indeed. I'm going to regale everyone with a famous quote. So this time I got one from Dr. Samuel Johnson, who was the guy who wrote the first ever English dictionary. And he says, and I quote, "There is nothing which has yet been contrived by man by which so much happiness is produced as by a good tavern."
Cheers, everybody!